Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Blaine Lehrer on WNYC, and tomorrow is the closing day for the 16th highest grossing musical of all time, a musical that's been seen by 2 million people and has played for 3 years, so it sounds like a hit, right? Well, only the musical that's closing is Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. It might have grossed over $200 million, but it was the most expensive musical ever, and its investors are nowhere near getting their money back, we're told. And that doesn't take into account the injuries to cast members that plagued the production or the lawsuits over creative control. Playwright Glenn Berger, who co-wrote the book for the musical, now has published an account trying to find the answer to how this production, with Julie Taymor of Lion King fame and Bono and The Edge from U2 could have gone so wrong. It's called Song of Spider-Man, the inside story of the most controversial musical in Broadway history. And he joins us now. Glenn, welcome to WNYC.
Well, my pleasure.
So you were credited as the co-writer of the book for the musical, first with director Julie Taymor and then with the other playwright the producers brought in to fix things. How does that job work?
The job of book writer?
Yeah, the job of book writer and collaborator in the midst of all this chaos.
Yeah, you know, I'm getting deja vu because the last time I was in this studio, it was opening night, I guess 2.5 years ago or something. I was here with Roberto. You know, it's generally, I've my entire career worked on my own, you know, as a writer. And so to have a co-writer on board is a new experience in some ways. But I did a lot of television work. And so, you know, in that kind of situation, you get into a room and you bounce ideas off. And early on, Julie, she had a notion of the general story. And I was more of the words fellow, you know, early on.
Why was this the most expensive musical ever? Where did that money go?
One might wonder. Well, you know, for a bit of perspective, you when you look at a circus show like the Cirque du Soleil shows like Ka and other ones like that, those cost upward of $150 million, $200 million, I think, was Ka. This was only $75 million. I think once you start dealing with certain circus elements like these motors and winches that were required for the flying, you had a whole other budget line that you had to take care of. And so, you know, people talk about, oh, you know, it was over budget and cost overruns. It was always anticipated as being a rather high-budgeted musical.
And those things are ongoing. It wasn't just the cost to get it on track, but as I understand it, it's closing in part because the weekly running costs are still so high.
Yeah, you know, it's a weird situation because even now, Spider-Man is taking in, you know, $800,000 a week. It took in $2 million last week. It was taking in numbers that a typical Broadway show would be happy to keep running in perpetuity. But it was taking $800,000 a week, and it cost $1.2 million every week.
That's incredible. Is there no way, or was there any consideration of doing it, you know, a little bit lower tech so a successful musical that people keep coming to see could keep running?
Yeah, you that would have been great. There were several attempts to try to get that number lower, and I think they did get it, you know, lower at the end of the day, even if that included, you know, cutting the royalties to the creatives some. But at the end of the day, there was too many, you know, even for safety reasons, you needed extra people in order, you know, when someone's getting hooked up to the harnesses and everything, that's higher.
And I gather there's an attempt to move it to Las Vegas where the labor costs might be lower?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a numbers guy, so I don't know how it works out in Vegas.
And it's important to say that the costs weren't just financial. Actors were injured, some seriously. Was the production just too complicated from the start to be done safely?
No, I don't think anybody feels that. You know, the feeling early on with those injuries were that it was just bad luck and trial and error. I mean, not to downplay any of them. A lot of human error involved. Then once after Chris Tierney's fall in January of 2011, I think there was a pretty good run of 20 months going when there really wasn't any incident so much to speak of, anything out of the ordinary. Of course, then this summer we had another horrific injury. So
there's risk involved with this kind of production. Yeah. Well, you were on the New York Post columnist Michael Riedel's television program, which was pretty ironic since he's probably on your list of reasons things went badly with his seeming glee in print over the chaos, and seemed to conclude that it was the death of the original producer, Tony Adams, that left no one able to set limits on the creative side. Is that your take?
Well, at the time, Tony Adams, I was only on the project for about 6 months when he died. And he, even in those 6 months, he made such an impression on me and on everyone who knew him. He had a way of being incredibly charming. And it was really his vision that got Bono and Edge on board and Julie Taymor. And you had a sense that he could accomplish really anything that needed accomplishing. And once he died, I think we were in denial for a long time of just how important it was to have him on board.
So artists need constraints for good work, even if their perception is that those limits might be the problem.
Yeah. We felt... Certainly, we had the sensation of feeling like we were trying to be reasonable and constraining ourselves. I remember lots of set design meetings where, we were told by the producers who then were on board, David Garfinkel and Martin McCallum, that, we needed to cut things. And we went at cutting them. You're not really clear. It isn't clear what needs to get pulled back sometimes until after the fact.
One of the fascinating things about the story you tell in the book is that it seems like you don't really have a villain, that everybody does their best, but it ends in betrayal and acrimony and lawsuits, if not the hospital. There's no bad guy here, no culprit.
No, I mean, maybe that's just how I'm put together. I knew these people, and they're all good people trying to do what they felt needed doing at the time. I think one of the things that happened was that it became such a pressure cooker of a situation. The media lamps were on us, and they were hot. And I think people began acting in ways that, stressed animals begin to, act once they're in some sort of
Lord of the Flies
situation. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and it might not be how the other players see it, that there was no bad guy. At least if one believes Michael Riedel's column, you're the bad actor who betrayed Julie Taymor and her artistic vision. Do you think that's how she would tell the story?
I try not to dwell on that, how she would tell the story. I know. I mean, unfortunately, I think she got a skewed version of events once the papers started going back and forth between lawyers during that lawsuit and things, the chronology of events is really important. I think that, it was our mutual vision, early on. And then what happened was that reality intruded, and certain things that we were relying on happening, technologically and whatnot, weren't happening.
And what would you say about Marvel Comics' role? Because they wanted it like the Spider-Man movies, didn't they, while Julie Taymor had a more conceptual vision?
Yeah, well, and Marvel did get on board eventually, early on. They understood what Julie was going for. What Julie was saying was, look, guys, you've got to give the audience something they're not expecting in addition to what they're expecting, or else, what's the point? It's not going to, her recipe with The Lion King was, everyone saw the movie. They thought they knew what they were going to get, but they were presented with something also very novel. And she was trying to do that not just in the staging, but also a little bit in the narrative, you know?
So as Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark goes dark after tomorrow, was there a best moment for you and a worst moment for you as you look back on the whole thing?
Well, yeah, well, there were, but then it gets colored all over again with the, you know, when you look back on it. I think about those times in Bono's apartment in New York when Bono and Edge and Julie and I were just sort of spinning out ideas, and there was just this sort of, you know, just the adrenaline and the high of four people who are on the same page, and that page is this very intangible page. You know, you're working, you know, on sort of abstract ideas, but everyone, you can feel everybody getting it, you know, and then you get this entire flip side, you know, months late, you know, years later, when no one is on the same page. The pages are scattered all over the city.
The creative process, highs and lows. Glenn Berger, who was co-writer of the book for the musical Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, which ends its run and goes dark on Broadway tomorrow. He's now written the book, Song of Spider-Man, the inside story of the most controversial musical in Broadway history. Thank you so much, and good luck to you with whatever you do next.
Oh, my pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.